right, Space Cowboys. It's such a misnomer of a film, because as a cowboy, you're always cowboying space of a sort. Okay, what is a ranch if not an area of space?
Oh, I see.
Right. Just fun with words, right?
You mean so it's like Space Cowboys as opposed to like Corridor Cowboys or something? Or like, you know,
yeah.
Enclosed cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, the movie Office Space isn't about a bunch of people from HR who get corralled into a fucking spaceship and get flown up and then wag their finger at Yuri Gagarin and go, "You haven't filled in your forms, Yuri. We've heard you've been harassing some of the space monkeys, actually, you know?"
That's true, yeah. And actually, the irony is as well that most of the time in space, with the exception of one or two little space walks where the astronauts are invariably tied to the craft anyway, they're actually all jammed in this tin can, aren't they? Where there's less space than there would be on the ranch. So space cowboys, if anything, you sort of are cowboying a confined area, aren't you? At least there's no bloody cows in there, though.
Yeah, I mean, where do space cows? What noise do space cows make?
Yeah,
moon.
It's a trick question. You can't hear noise in space. Space is a vacuum. Yeah.
No, but I think
where do horses live in space? You know, trick question. They don't. There's no. Again, space is a vacuum. There's no oxygen.
Well,
no,
grass. Right. I was going to go with moon. What's? Oh, here we go. What's a space cow's favorite sci-fi movie directed by Duncan Jones?
What is it?
It's Source Code.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the old classic switcheroo.
The old switch and bait. What does a space cow jump over when it's trying to get to sleep?
The moon.
No, just like Earth, because for a space cow, Earth would be the distant star of dreams.
Yes.
Whereas for Earth cows, it's the moon, you know.
What when you milk a space cow?
Oh, yeah.
What comes out of its udders?
It's a good question. What does come out of a space cow's udders?
Space jizz.
Oh, space jizz.
That's where the Project Hail Mary space jizz comes out from.
Yeah,
that's the source code for.
Okay, how do you capture an escaped space cow? What tool do you use to capture an escaped space cow?
A lasso.
It's French.
Here's one for you.
Oh, good. Yeah.
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 No. That's it. That's
all. I've got one for you if you want.
Okay.
You know how they say most of a ranch hand's job is building fences.
Mm.
That's most of the job. In fact, there are these famous stories, aren't there, of fences that run ranches that are so big that a ranch hand will spend all year just doing one circumnavigation of the ranch to fix the fences. And so from January to December, they'll sort of make it all the way around and then back again. How long does it take the space ranch hand to fix all of their fences?
I guess as quite some time.
Yeah, an infinite amount of time, because space is infinite. And is expanding. So every time he gets back around again, which obviously he couldn't, because it's infinite, the fences would have these massive gaps between them anyway, because of the nature of the constantly expanding universe. So it's whatever they are offering you, it's not worth it, I'd say, to be a space ranch hand.
Yeah, I mean, do you know also when it comes to space cow tipping, the habit of going up to a space cow and tipping it over it whilst it sleeps,
right?
All that happens is you put it into kind of a geostationary spinning orbit.
Geostationary?
Well, that's like one of those words, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, that's one of those words. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I often wonder as well about just those space boys when there's no cow involved. You know, obviously this film is about space cowboys, but space boys... That's a good movie as well, you know. That's also a good film. They're a little younger. a little greener than some of these grey old bastards.
Well, if I were to make the movie Space Boys,
yeah,
I would.
I'd spell it with a Z. B-O-I-Z.
No, I would do the Peter Pan thing. So they'd be the Lost Boys, but they'd be Lost in Space Boys.
Oh, with Matt LeBlanc. Lost in Space Boys with Matt LeBlanc.
I mean, he'd get a cameo. He's not a boy, but it's Lost in Space Boys.
Matt LeBlanc in some ways, though, is the boy that did grow up, but was still a boy when he grew up. You know, that's his whole vibe, isn't it? That he's sort of like... You ever watch any interviews with him since Friends?
No,
like where no.
I wouldn't watch even before Friends. At the time of Friends, I'm not a big LeBlanc.
No one was watching the before Friends. That's nuts.
Yeah,
but, you know, he's one of those people who I think he's kind of a major inspiration for lots of people, because unlike the other cast members of Friends, whenever you see Matt LeBlanc interviewed and they ask him what do you do these days, he just says nothing. You know, nothing. And they go, oh, really? Yeah, you're not working? No. Don't want to? No. What do you do? I just hang around, watch TV, read books, you know, look after my kids, whatever. He's sort of seems just very contented to live his life with his money. Yeah, and
he has to be, because he hasn't got any other discernible talent than
you're so
playing.
Cynical.
He's not. It's
he
like,
could be in Space Boys.
He couldn't. He tried to be in Lost in Space, and he sucked.
That was during Friends, though.
I know, and they all said, go back to telly, mate. Try your little shit spin-off. Ooh, didn't work, did it, mate? All right, do you know
I
what?
I thought he was okay in that.
Yeah.
in Lost in Space, I mean. Lost in Space Cowboys, that's different, isn't it? That one's different.
That's
like
different.
Trying to understand Clint Eastwood from the inside. How could that? I don't understand how that would work. Lost inside Space Cowboys.
Then it's kind of an inner space thing. What, you know, you shrink down a group of little boys and then you inject them into Clint Eastwood.
Right.
And then you've got Lost in Space Cowboys boys.
No, we're talking Lost in Space Cowboys boys with Matt LeBlanc, who obviously would be inside.
Because
Clint Eastwood is kind of like Matt LeBlanc. If Matt LeBlanc was a film director, I think he'd be like in the Clint Eastwood school, wouldn't he? Where he'd let the actors do one take and then he'd be like, that was good, do you want to do another? And they'd say yes or no, and then he'd move on. That's how Matt LeBlanc would approach serious filmmaking work, I think. He's certainly not a Wes Anderson or David Fincher type, is he? He would be much more relaxed about it. Whereas Ross from Friends, get away, you know. That guy's doing 100 takes of everything. So intense is he.
The character or the person?
Well, I don't know the person. Mm. I know the character. So I'm saying I think the character would do them. Out of a sense of uncertainty, Ross would do 30, 40 takes every time. And then he'd go into the fridge on set and he'd notice that someone had taken his sandwich and it would be game over for the production.
Yeah, that's a fun game that they'd love to play on TikTok. Which movie director would a Friends character be?
Yeah, let's play it now. Okay.
No.
Chandler Bing, the late Chandler Bing, Matthew Perry.
Well,
if he was a film director, like, which film director would he be?
One of the Farrellys or like Mel Brooks or something.
Because he's funny.
Yeah, he's quippy and silly.
So he'd be like a quippy film director.
Yeah.
Like one of the Farrellys or Mel Brooks or something.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, no, I got it. Yeah,
and then
good. You're
saying it back like you just...
What about Rachel Green, Jennifer Aniston? I think...
Well, none of the female characters are going to get a chance to direct at
no,
all.
No, come on.
Is this 2026?
Listen... Rachel Green is getting an opportunity. She is. Are we talking about the character or Jennifer Aniston? Because I feel like those are two very different.
This game
people.
Is the Friends characters. If you want to play the game properly.
Okay. This is the character.
Rachel Green.
Rachel Green.
She's Sofia Coppola.
Okay.
All surface, got nothing between the ears, and would make a rubbish movie again and again.
Did you rewatch Lost in Translation yet? You said you were going to. Did you rewatch it?
I'm now excited about the game because now
then
I'm
shut
just
up. Okay, Phoebe. Would Phoebe be like art house sort of? Would she make a? I don't know. Would she be? What's the name of the guy who does all those movies?
No, she's an indie kooky oddball. So.
What about is she the kind of Greta Gerwig, you know, cause she make late who made Lady Bird, is that Greta Gerwig?
Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, I think that'd be interesting. Okay, great, fine. Then who's left? We've got Ross. Ross from Friends?
Well, let's do the women together. Do Monica.
Oh, Monica. Well, she would just direct music videos, like all of Bruce Springsteen's music videos, right?
I think it's very unfair. The character is fastidious and cooks. So
that's
she would
true.
Be where, she'd the be character. Wes Anderson. She's fussy and she's obsessed about detail and she's not really a good character at all.
No, she's not really a good character. She's not. She's just a plot device to help make sure that the set always looks the same. I like that. Okay, and then we've got Ross from Friends, who I think is David Fincher.
I guess maybe David Fincher is right. Like, many strings to his bow, different speeds, different genres.
Eventually rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fine. And then, of course, it's Joey. Joey's Clint Eastwood.
I mean, I'm not going to push back on that, but that's just the one, that's the most gibberish one of the lot.
I'm not saying he'd be as good as Clint Eastwood. I'm just saying, also, the irony here is that Joey, the character, knows more about movies than any of the other characters, you know. He's an actor.
Joey's a thicko who's actually quite shit, but attractive. So you want a thick, someone who people think is good, looks good, but is actually shit. So like Michael Bay, Joey is more like Michael Bay.
But isn't Michael Bay like a very impressive technical director?
That's true.
So Joey's not like that at all.
No, you're right. Joey's not like that at all.
I think you've got that one wrong.
The Friends fans are going to absolutely come for me. You completely misunderstand the character of Joey. You idiot.
Idiots.
Yeah, okay, so someone...
What about Gustav? Is that his name? What's the name of the
Gunter.
Guy in Gunter, in the coffee shop? Is that Gunter?
You can't. We're not spreading out to side characters,
oh,
Joe.
Right, fine.
It's 15 minutes in. How much of this is going to stay in?
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. With me, your host, Adam Richmondo, a.k.a. Adam Richmond, for those who are not familiar with my various names.
Hang on, the guy from Man vs. Food. Wow.
That's Adam Richman, and he's disgraced.
No, it's not. Is it Richman?
Yeah, Richman, and he was disgraced. I do not like to be bought, you know, I don't want,
what
I don't
was
want
he,
that guy.
How was he disgraced?
Oh, you don't want to know.
I'm just looking.
Not in a nice way. He wasn't a nice man. He wasn't a nice rich man.
Theft.
Like me.
On October the 23rd, 2024, while filming the second series of Adam Richman Eats Britain for Discovery Plus, Adam Richman's belongings were stolen from a vehicle at the London Gateway Services on the M1 in Barnet. Well, that's obviously not the bit.
Don't worry. Let's not dwell on Adam Richman. I'm not Adam Richman.
Okay, fine.
I'm Adam Richmond.
You're Adam Richmond, yeah.
This is the show where we talk about the movies or films we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And I can only do that with my co-host, my best pal, Mr. Joe Devine.
Yes, hello. How's it going?
Pretty good. I'm recording in a new space today.
Oh, yes, you are. You're in a new space with grey walls.
Where could I be? I'm not at home. Don't have the pitter-patter of tiny feet thundering around.
Right, so you're not at home and there's no young people.
Yeah.
So you must be in an old person's home.
No, yeah, I don't have a ball and chain clanking around either.
There's no women. So you must be in an exclusively male old person's home.
Yes.
Yes, found it.
Different time of day as well, 4:20. So different vibe, I think, for today's episode. How are you, Mr. Joe Devine?
I'm okay. I'm reading that Adam Richman responded to some people on Instagram when he posted about his weight loss, people who were critical and were talking about eating disorders. He responded to them by telling them to grab a razor blade and draw a bath. Is that why he was disgraced? That's on his Wikipedia page.
On today's episode, we are doing the 2000 Clint Eastwood directed flick, Space Cowboys.
Yeah. But you got to say it like this. You got to say Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys. Starring Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Donnie Sutherland, James Garner, Jimmy Cromwell, That'll Do Pig, and Marcia Gay Harden. It was, of course, directed by Clint Eastwood. I've already said that.
Yeah.
And here is to the letterboxed blurb. Space will never be the same. I mean, what kind of blurb is that? I think it will. Space will be unchanged by the arrival of four old geezers who get accidentally flown into space.
Yeah.
I mean, not accidentally, kind of quite deliberately. Frank Corvin, Hawk Hawkins, Jerry O'Neill, and Tank Sullivan were hot dog members of Project Daedalus, the US Air Force's test program for space travel. But their hopes were dashed in 1958 with the formation of NASA. Damn you, NASA!
Yeah.
And the use of trained chimps. They blackmail their way into orbit when Russia's mysterious Icon communication satellite's orbit begins to degrade and threatens to crash to Earth. What an appalling bit of blurb, letterboxed. Shame on you.
Yeah, terrible blurb.
They do get asked. Space Cowboys, Clint Eastwood's character, he's an engineer, and he's engineered some bit of space gubbins, and there's one on one of these satellites. It gets broken. He's the only guy who knows how to fix it. They go, can you tell us how to fix it? And he goes, only if you send me to space with my old space cowboys, please. And they go, oh, okay. They have to spend 40 minutes of this very long film justifying why they could get these old geezers into space.
Well, I mean, I think it's a credit to them that they managed to justify it within 40 minutes, because it's rather an unbelievable premise, isn't it?
Just get them into space. Trick him into space, anything.
No, because I actually believe fully that, and Clint knows this, Clint Eastwood is the star and director, as you've already noted. He knows that actually the most boring parts are in space. The fun part is the montage of their experience at NASA and on the ground, and the friendships and fun sort of banter they have along the way, Adam Richmond.
Yeah, you see, that's the potential of this movie. Unfortunately, the montages are shit, and there is no fun to be had with the men who there's so much possibility for these old geezers to meet and talk about aging and rediscover a new lease of life, and the film absolutely does nothing with them at all. There's no great scene. There's no lovely moments. It's very, very boring. I'm really angry that you made me watch this movie.
You know how sometimes you watch a film that you know I like, and you pretend to like it until the end of the episode, and then you trick me by saying...
I did that once, and I didn't even do it.
Could you do that now, do you think, maybe? Could you suspend disbelief for a moment? And because this film... Now, I don't want to be too overt.
Yeah.
But I have a deep personal connection, an emotional connection with this film. It means a lot to me, and I think it's a piece of art. I think it's a fine piece of art, as Donald Sutherland would say, the character from the film, a fine piece of art. And it means something to me, you know? So to hear you so carelessly, you know, layer on the torment causes me pain.
Ask me why I have an
emotional connection.
How did this happen? How did you get a relationship with this film?
Well, my grandfather, and I suppose my grandmother, although I've kind of like deauthorized her in the story, which that's interesting, isn't it? Because they were a married couple. They lived together. They both owned this on VHS, but I consider it to be his.
Right. You are Clint in the story. This is what Clint would do.
Clint would do that. Yeah, yeah.
You see Clint's wife in the beginning scene, and then not for about an hour.
He doesn't even go
And then he
over
doesn't even
her.
Say goodbye to her.
I fucking love
She's
that so
standing
much.
In the audience, waving. She's so expectant. And Clint...
You're absolutely right. Just a bit, for people who are watching that haven't heard this, they're walking onto the spaceship to take off into space at this point. And as Adam says, about an hour of the way into the film. And Clint's wife is in the front row. We've heard throughout that first hour of the film is how dangerous this thing is, how they might not come back, you know. All he has to do is take two steps over to her, to embrace her, to touch her hands, but he doesn't. He doesn't do it. He just looks at her, a little wink, and then he walks onto the spaceship, and I was like, wow, it was a different time, wasn't it? It was a different time.
He doesn't even have a phone call with her.
No.
Like, he reconnects with his old buddy, Tommy Lee Jones, who's got a very fractious relationship with. He finds out this character, Tommy Lee Jones has got cancer or something, one of those diseases that means something of the spleen. What's the spleen even for? Oh, that's a nice bit.
I think it's the pancreas, isn't it?
Spleen, pancreas.
He finds out also that because when they're first seen, when they reconvene, he ends it by saying, like, send my love to Barbara or whatever, Tommy Lee Jones's wife. And Tommy says, well, I would like to do that, but, you know, she's passed away.
Fantastic.
And that's the kind of thing as well that would, if that happened to me, if I went to work tomorrow and I saw a colleague of mine and the colleague said my wife died, I'd call my wife.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd call my wife, and I wouldn't be able, because Clint can't show his emotion to Tommy Lee Jones. It's a really lovely scene. I like that. And that's what I wanted, loads more moments like that. But at least, Clint, call your wife and say, I've met him. Fuck me. His wife's dead. And it's made me really, really doubly realise how lucky I am and how much I love you. And I'm really worried that we might die up there. And I'm risking all this purely for my own sense of ego because I want to be a space cowboy.
That's true.
No, movie's not interested.
Whereas also, later in the film, when you realise that Tommy Lee Jones, spoilers here, obviously, Tommy Lee Jones is going to sacrifice himself in order that the mission be complete and that his friends are safe and can return to Earth, you realise that his wife being dead is really just a plot device in order to make him the most expendable of the crew and give him the ability to be a kind of hero at the end. So, you know, I watched that with very 2026 goggles on, thinking, oh, that's a nice little emotional touch. These two old boys who are American military men who have this kind of, you know, closed down approach to their emotional expression. They are exchanging subtly, wordlessly, some emotional feelings during this scene when one of them finds out that the other's wife is dead. Yeah, I don't think it even is that. I really think it's just setting the scene for what happens later. Because it's a problem to be solved, right? Like, if one of them needs to stay in space in order to save the others, then he wouldn't do that if he still had his wife around. So she needs to be dead. Like, it's like writing the film backwards rather than writing it forwards.
But then they give Tommy Lee Jones, he gets the main female part, Marsha Gay Harden, to mac on. It's like she gives him
he gets the squeeze.
A little window to, like, oh, you can have sex again.
Tell me about a little window, hey? Yeah, big time.
Right? So he'd be like, I'm not killing myself. I've just got a little taste of sex again.
Me and Marcy are sitting on top of a car looking at the Houston skyline, you know? We're rocking it like 18-year-olds at point view.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I know, it's strange. It is strange. And I will admit, watching it again as an adult, I can see that it's not a fantastic film. But you asked me before, how did this happen?
So you're back at your grandparents.
My grandfather and grandmother, of course. But my grandmother had a serious stroke in 1997, which left her, we used to call it disabled. I don't know, I feel as though the word has been updated and I'm not totally...
You're not said to be disabled, you have a disability.
Okay.
She's your grandma and I think you can say what you like.
And then in this instance, she had a disability, but it came about because she had been disabled by this stroke, right? It very, very much was a doing word in that sense.
I think you've done your due diligence there with how to use language, and I respect you and honour you for that.
Thanks.
So thank you.
And I forward your honour on to my disabled grandmother, who sadly passed away a few years ago.
Your grandma, who had a disability.
Who had a disability.
she was disabled by a stroke.
my grandmother had a disability that she got when she was disabled by the stroke that she had. Anyway, I think one of the reasons, obviously reason number one why I've sidelined her in this story, she's a woman. Okay, that's the first thing. Let's just be honest about it. I've done a misogyny. And in the context of this film, which is about men, I think it makes sense that I've done a misogyny. Not forgivable, but that's what's happened. Thing number two, why have I sidelined her? She had a disability that she got when she was disabled by a stroke. And so she was, in some ways, she was the secondary of the two of them in my life, because I was young when that happened. So whilst I remember her, and I do think she was quite funny, she couldn't really talk that well for a lot of my life. So it was difficult to have conversations with her, or very long conversations with her. And my grandfather was much more of a sort of active presence in my life as a result of that. So that would be the second reason beyond the inherent misogyny as to why I've sidelined her.
When you say misogyny, can I pick you up on misogyny?
Oh, you can pick me up on misogyny. My wife's doing that all the time.
It's not misogyny. It's just... it's good old-fashioned chauvinism,
right,
and sexism.
Right.
Misogyny is a hatred of women, and you don't hate women.
No.
You just don't think of them. You think of them differently, minimise them.
I take away their authority.
Yeah, and that's chauvinism.
So I did some good old-fashioned chauvinism.
Yeah.
Little bit of sexism. Yeah.
Little bit of sexism.
Which is interesting as it relates to their relationship, because they had a rather old-fashioned relationship, although they were both in... the Royal Air Force, grandmother as well. That's where they met. Although I think, you know, she took a step back, went to raise their children. They had this quite, you know, traditional relationship in that sense, that he was working and she was the stay-at-home mother. But when they were about to retire, she had this stroke that disabled her, that caused her to have a disability. And then that, in some ways, the kind of traditional... gender roles, or the roles that are assigned, that were assigned to gender in the 20th century, they swapped, because my grandfather suddenly went from being this military working man who had an important job, and then, you know, later worked in nuclear security. He was a strange guy. He had to learn to cook and to clean, and to, you know, he did all of the domestic care, much like Clint Eastwood would have done. You know, I feel like there's a Clint Eastwood film in there somewhere. They're 60 years old and things change, and Clint scowls at the camera in the first scene. It's like, well, I'm going to have to, you know, lift his hands up, and he's wearing big yellow gloves because he's doing the washing up or something.
Maybe, see, in the Clint Eastwood version of that movie, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't learn how to do the cooking or the cleaning. He'd have a tidy house, but...
maybe that's more a Robert De Niro thing.
He'd still make scrambled eggs. A man knows how to make scrambled eggs, for God's sake.
A man knows how to make scrambled eggs, that's true.
And just that, though. Anything else.
Yeah.
And of course, he knows how to keep things tidy. I've got some self-goddamn respect, but anything else?
A man knows how to keep things tidy. A man knows how to ignore Japanese instructions that come with DIY.
My favourite bit of the movie.
I like that bit too. Anyway, my grandfather, and I suppose my grandmother, although she was disabled... they owned this on VHS. They had a series. They had about 8 videos that whenever I visited, I kind of rinsed through. So there's a number of films that I have seen probably upwards of 10 times that were purely based on what they bought because they thought we would like it. Space Cowboys was one of them. Jungle to Jungle was another of these films.
Tim Allen.
And then that boy.
Ad exec goes to the jungle and has to come back.
Yeah,
they've got the jungle, right, and then there's the urban jungle.
Yeah.
What a real fish out of water tale, I imagine.
Absolutely. My father had one when my parents had separated and he lived above a pub. There was one video in the upstairs of this pub, and it was The Castle. Is that what it's called? The Castle?
The Last Castle with Robert Redford?
No.
James Gandolfini?
No, it was a comedy.
Oh, the Australian comedy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I never watched that one, but I just remember seeing the case, and it's just sitting on its own with the CDs, always thinking, why does he have that? I don't know why. Never heard of this film.
It's supposed to be really funny.
We should watch it.
It's become quite the cult classic. I'm pretty sure there's a young Eric Banner in it.
Really?
He was more of a stand-up.
Eric Banner was a stand-up?
Yeah, he was a comic guy. Wow. Before he was Chopper.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that flick for ages, and I'll do it to honour your dead father.
Well, I was going to say, what if we had an episode or a mini-series that was called Our Fathers, and we watched films that were either their favourite or that we know of? Or, I mean, do you know what your dad's favourite film is? He's alive. You could ask him, but...
I'll do it based on memory, and I remember that the film that was recorded... And I remember that, you know, the writing on the video on the VCR.
Yeah.
Local Hero. You know the movie Local Hero?
No. What's that?
It's a Bill Forsyth flick. It's about this American played by Peter Reigart, and he gets sent over to this little Scottish village.
1983.
Yeah. And there's oil. It's someone they've struck oil, and he's got to buy the land.
Ah.
But they all trick him somehow. Like, they know that they want to sell, but he thinks that they won't want to. And then I think it's all about... it's quite a charming film. It's very well regarded. I remember the front cover of it because I would see it in the Blockbuster. It's Peter Rygar. He's got his suit trousers rolled up and he's standing in the water.
Burt Lancaster.
He's not in it loads.
Right.
So that's that one. And of course, both of us have one Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That was your dad's favourite?
I mean, it was on one of the videotapes and I remember it knocking around.
Do you think all dads love that film?
I think so.
Wow.
Because it's about a freewheeling, spirited man who gets crushed and controlled by a horrible woman.
Right.
And they really see themselves in that story. It's really sad. Really sad.
I just want to distance myself from what you said. But
no, I'm just talking about a generation of men.
Not specific men.
Yeah, not specific.
That
not
were crushed
dad.
By horrible women.
No, they weren't, though. They weren't crushed. That's their view of things. You know, my dad left. Why? Because he got a Native American guy to throw a fucking water cooler through the window of our house just so he could escape. He was stuck there.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. When you told me that Eric Bana was a stand-up, which I didn't know,
yeah.
I remembered I wrote a funny joke yesterday. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Now, this is a joke. It would be a description of a person. You know, I'll be talking about a guy, a nice, quiet guy who isn't a guy that enjoys conflict. I'll say, he was the kind of guy that wouldn't even say boo to a goose, you know? Even though the goose was being put to death for war crimes.
Right, because he'd be saying boo.
He'd be saying boo, boo to that goose, yeah.
He wouldn't just say boo, boo.
He'd boo. Be booing a goose that, you know, the implication being if the goose was being put to death for war crimes, it's done a lot of illegal murder.
Probably deserves a booing.
And that this was the kind of guy, he wouldn't even boo that goose. Not just an ordinary goose. A goose that was being put to death for war crimes.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of man wouldn't boo a goose put to death?
For war crimes.
For war crimes.
Clint Eastwood would. He would.
Eastwood.
Did you know that Clint Eastwood wrote the score for many of his movies and is a jazz pianist?
I knew he was musical and he loved jazz. He did a jazz flick about...
Was it about jazz?
Bird, maybe just Bird, about Charlie Parker Bird.
Right. Oh, yes, Charlie Parker Bird, yes.
Bird, or then also...
Charlie Bird Parker.
Yeah, Charlie Bird Parker. And then he feels like he did another one where he plays jazz piano in it as well.
Really?
He's a real man of contradictions, is old Clint Eastwood. Everyone always just goes, oh, he did talk to an empty chair at the Republican convention.
He did do that.
That's the only thing they've got on him.
The thing is, though, when a jazz pianist talks to an empty chair at a convention, you start to think, well, is this some kind of avant-garde art that he's doing? You know, when just an ordinary Republican speaks to an empty chair at a conference, you think, this guy's a lunatic, you know?
Yeah, I think because he's right wing, you know, Timmy Chalamet, he's probably quite left and he gets loads of shit for all the weird stuff he does. So he's fine.
I bet he's not.
All right.
I bet he's not.
Come on.
I think those people are so focused on their career. Here's a thought I had. This is a real tangent now, but I was thinking about this yesterday. You know how we've been talking recently about movie stars because we watched Project Hail Mary. We were talking about Ryan Gosling. And that, you know, the notion that, like, up until this movie, he hasn't really been able to, quote, open a film. Timmy Chalamet is maybe we'll be able to do that in the future, but isn't quite there now. Although Timmy Chalamet seems sort of ready, the heir apparent to Leonardo DiCaprio's movie star throne, potentially. And there's very, very few of these sorts of people. Now, one reading of that, of course, is that it's such an impossibility to be, you know, virtually a complete rarity these days. But there feels that there's a generational gap, doesn't there, between Leonardo DiCaprio, who's quite old, and Timmy C. And then I saw a photograph of Heath Ledger yesterday, while he was doing the Dark Knight, and I thought, oh, was Heath Ledger? Is he the missing, or could he have been the missing generational step between these two people? He'd just done the Joker, the Dark Knight. I think his career trajectory at that time, whatever he'd chosen to do next, on the basis of that success, I think he could have opened a film. Could he be the missing step generationally as a real movie star?
No.
A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal it?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.
So, you know, I watched a series of interviews with the cast of Space Cowboys, talking about Space Cowboys, because I was trying to understand what they thought the themes of the film were. Like, what were the selling points of this film? It's kind of an unusual thing, right? One of them was this notion of age. They didn't really call it ageism in the same way at the time, but essentially ageism, right? The idea that there were these characters who had aged out of what they were good at doing. And the film is trying to say, hey, people in their 60s can still do this stuff. Young people are getting so carried away and so urgent. Let the good old times roll, right? But, you know, there's that as a sort of theme. Anyway, Tommy Lee Jones is asked about this, and he's asked, does he ever think that as an actor, that ageism affects him? Or that, you know, as he gets older, is he you know, finding it different to be in Hollywood, trying to be cast in these films? His answer was very interesting, and maybe, you know, to be expected, but was very, very interesting. And he had a very considered answer. He said that it's often been said it takes 20 years to be a good actor, to get good at doing this thing. And so, you know, in his case, he says that's true, but often that can mean that after 20 years of acting, you know, maybe between 40, 50 years old. And for him, he found that that's when he really started to book roles more easily. But for his female friends who were his age, who were just getting excellent at acting, that's when they started to find it harder to get roles. So he was very keen to point out that there's a clear difference in Hollywood, which I don't think it's not an original observation, but I think it was an important one. That there's a big difference between him as a male actor and his friends as female actors. That the deep kind of sad irony of it is, just as they started to get really good at their craft, they then stopped getting roles, which I think speaks to the different reasons why people are being picked and cast in these various different films. And it got me thinking about something that you said, because you watched Space Cowboys a few days ago and you texted me. And you said something to the effect of, you know, you love that Marcia Gay Harden is in this film, and you love that casting choice. Why did you say that?
Well, I'm watching it and she's a forgot actress, because she's not in nearly enough stuff. She was never really a big star, and then I think she was suddenly, people were chatting about her when she was in a film called Pollock, about the painter Jackson Pollock, and I'm pretty sure she won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for that. That film has definitely disappeared. But then after that, she'll book, as soon as you win an Oscar, you know, you're in the mix and you start getting booked for bigger stuff. But so, yeah, she, like, for that kind of it's still a Clint Eastwood movie, and it's the lead female role, and she's not a typical female support lead. Like, you know, jump 10, 20 years later when Clint is directing, I'm pretty sure he directed Trouble with the Curve with Amy Adams. The lead is Amy Adams, younger and more attractive, but a similar kind of, I'd say, is in the same ballpark as Marcia Gay Harden. But you don't get, like, female stars and actresses, they don't tend to look like Marcia Gay Harden anymore.
No, I think that's true.
She's a beautiful woman.
Of course.
A beautiful woman.
Of course.
Very attractive.
But she's also an ordinary looking person. She's an incredibly attractive, ordinary looking person, right? Like, right. I see people like her in my real life when I go outside. Not that often, but they do exist. Whereas I feel as though many of today's successful actresses and actors, I don't think this is necessarily something that is exclusive to female actors, but is definitely more prevalent. They are extraordinarily alien-like beautiful. You know, they are. You do not see people like them when you walk around. You leave your house on a day to day basis, and this became very clear to me because I wanted to ask you if we could do a recasting of Space Cowboys. And I think we'll come to that a little later. But when I was trying to think about who I would have play the Marcia Gay Harden role, I was thinking, well, if I'm casting it today, I'm looking for a woman who is between 40 and 50 years old. And I looked through a very, very long list of actresses who are that age today. Virtually none of whom are ordinary, like pretty, but ordinary looking people. Almost all of them are unbelievably otherworldly attractive.
Well, can I because I looked, I had a little look for actresses. So Marcia Gay Harden is 66 now, so born in 1959, that would make her like 41 when Space Cowboys comes out. So I had a look, I kind of went for a wider range of similarly aged actresses now who are around, like, say 55 to 70. So actors, these are big name actresses. They would have been around when Harden is knocking about. So you've got Julianne Moore, Laura Linney, Susan Sarandon, Kathy Bates, Sissy Spacek, Helen Hunt, Jodie Foster, Alfred Woodard, Alison Janney, Sally Field, Patricia Clarkson, and Joan Cusack. Now, you could argue that Julianne Moore and Laura Linney and Susan Sarandon are all very attractive, beautiful people. But those, they're really, like, they're quite beautiful women.
They are, but they're normal looking beautiful women. They're not like otherworldly model type, you know, unbelievable that they exist people.
So now compare that list to now, the actresses who are 40 or thereabouts now. Okay, Anna Kendrick, Amanda Seyfried.
Can I pause you off the bat just before you even carry on? Like, the notion that these women are even the same age that those women were at this, it's like when I read through a list similar earlier and I realized that Amanda Seyfried was 40. It blows my fucking mind. I'm like, that woman's 24 years old, surely.
Rachel Weisz, Rachel McAdams, Anne Hathaway, Rose Byrne, Olivia Wilde, Emily Blunt, Rebecca Ferguson, Rosamund Pike. These women are, like,
they're the most attractive women in their life. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're in their normal life, there is no one that they know that comes anywhere near to their kind of classic aesthetic beauty.
So where have all the ordinary women gone?
Where have the ordinary... and also, I want to say, like, this is where I want to connect it to male actors as well, because I don't think this is a uniquely female thing. I don't want to call it a problem or an issue because I don't know that it is that, but I don't want to.
It's more pronounced.
It's more pronounced because you do still get male character actors. It's still allowed. And whereas with women, the only area I can see it in is comedy where you can have funny women. Are you know, increasingly they still have to be beautiful, and men, you know, think of many of those actresses that have come through Saturday Night Live, for example, like Kate McKinnon or Kristen Wiig, who are, you know, both extremely funny and also extraordinarily beautiful as well. But, you know, I think comedy is like the only access for like normal looking people. Whereas with male actors, I still think you have the opportunity to be a kind of like quote unquote serious actor and be ordinary looking or even be ugly, right? Like there's a space for that still in a way that
Paul Giamatti. That's how he's been booking roles.
But where are the ordinary looking? Anyway, I don't know where they are. I couldn't find one to replace in my recasting game, Marcia Gay Harden. And I hope the caveat is already clear. You kind of made this point at the beginning. I don't want this to come across as though I'm saying Marcia Gay Harden's a real uggo, because that's obviously not the case. but there is an objective difference between how she looks and who she is, and who modern actresses of her age, when she was in Space Cowboys, now, what they look like. I mean, it's, I don't know.
There's loads going on here to in the world that's driving it. We don't need to unpack it. We're just saying, oh, we've observed it. You know, it's happening. And like, even the roles that get written for women, you know, you age out, you start off being the girlfriend, and then you don't get work for 10, 15 years, and then you start getting the mum roles. And so Hollywood has always had a huge representation problem, never mind just women, about, you know, all kinds of other things as well.
The truth is, if they remade Space Cowboys today, the actor that played the Marcia Gay Harden role would be younger.
Absolutely.
It's a riddle. Speak, friend, and enter. What's the Elvish word for friend?
Melon. You're going to recast it. If I were redoing this movie, it would be a bunch of old ladies tricking their way into a spaceship.
Well, I'd love to recast it all as women. I've done it with these rules. Okay, my rules are that the actors I've chosen have to be between 60 and 70 years old now. And they have to feel right for the role. All I've done is the main four guys, and then I've thrown in James Cromwell's role as well, because I think that's an important one to recast. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I want to hear from you is just, firstly, I want to hear like noises to represent individual vibes on the basis of these casting choices. But then I want one at the end as well, because I believe firmly as a fan of sports that you have your individual talent, but then you have your team. Okay. And an individual pick that you might not love, you could change your perspective of it when you hear the whole team.
Okay, but can I establish what the current characters are and what kind of role they are?
They're exactly the same.
Then I just want to check. Well, let's tell the listener. Okay, Clint Eastwood.
Okay,
is the gruff expert who is he's a hothead, and he's not a team player.
That's right.
He keeps getting told that.
He's the mildly blank sort of protagonist.
Tommy Lee Jones is the
cowboy. He's the real cowboy.
Yeah, he's a hot dog. He's a hot shot. He's a little bit sad, but cheeky. He's a cheeky, lovable hot dog.
Yes.
Donald Sutherland is a pervert.
Yes.
He's got sex on the brain.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
will fuck anything that moves.
Yeah.
And does and successfully. Does.
Yeah.
James Garner.
Who the fuck is James Garner, by the way? We'll come to that later, maybe, but like, I honestly can't even remember this guy's name.
Watching the movie now, I now realise why you don't know who James Garner is, because why are there four guys and they give James Garner sweet fuck all to do? James Garner, you can have anyone in that role. Poor guy. He was massive.
Yeah.
He doesn't do anything.
He's religious. He brings the faith with him. And he brings the hula girl. Okay.
Right. And then James Cromwell is the bloody stiff at the top who stitches them all up.
Yeah. Okay. So where would you like to start?
Well.
And bear in mind that, you know, we could save the best for last. Yeah.
Okay. Let's start at James Cromwell. That'll do pig.
Okay. James Cromwell. I've updated him. Obviously. I've done that with all of them.
Yeah, that's the game.
That's the game. I think who's the perfect man? He's got to be tall, because James Cromwell's tall. And I think it's important that James Cromwell looms over people in these scenes. So he's tall. He's believable in the role. He's also kind of evil. And you sort of know he's evil because you've seen him in other films as well. Okay? So I've picked Tim Robbins.
Yeah. Do I have to just make a noise?
I'm not doing anything jazzy, by the way. I want you to know. I'm playing this. I'm hitting this with a straight bat. I am updating this as if I were Clint Eastwood for today's generation. How do you feel about that?
I feel like you've gone for someone that don't. He's not in enough movies anymore, and people are. The reason why Cromwell works in this is probably because he's been in That'll Do, Pig.
Oh no, you think?
Yeah.
So you're thinking around box office, you're thinking, okay, he's not a draw. Because I don't think James Cromwell's the draw of this film. He's certainly not like, his name isn't on the poster.
No, but everyone's like, oh, there's the guy. And he's in...
Yeah, once they're in the film. Oh, good Lord. Okay, fine. Right. Moving on. Let's go with...
I think you focused on the tall aspect too much.
No, I just said that now. I only just said that now. I didn't even think of that before. Let's just try to think of some way.
I'd go Paul Giamatti.
You've gone short. You'd go for short James Cromwell. Paul Giamatti's too young.
He's not.
He's too young, man. Come on, what are you talking about?
We're saying 60.
Yeah, I know, but you really need this guy to be more towards the 70. Paul Giamatti is... He's 58 years old.
Okay, too young. Right? All right.
Tim Robbins... 67 years old. There's like 10 years between them.
Okay.
Tim Robbins is a good cast for this. I can't believe you started negatively here. I'm furious about it.
He's too nice, if anything.
He's not too nice. He's so evil.
He's evil in Arlington Road, but he's Andy Dufresne.
He's evil and crazy in almost everything, man.
At War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds.
He's not...
What about Mystic River? Hey, we're bringing Clint back to direct this. Clint knows how to work with Tim.
But he over-eggs it in that performance. I don't think he can do... And also, he's a pedo in that more.
All right, listen. He could be a pedo in this. Right. Okay, now I'm just going for it now. I'm giving you them in the pairs, okay? The first pair I'm giving you is Clint Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones. I'll do Garner and Sutherland first, okay? And it maybe won't make loads of sense, but you gotta hear the whole thing out, okay? James Garner is played by Oliver Platt. And Donald Sutherland is played by Kevin Bacon.
Yes, mate. You've absolutely fucking home-runned it, mate.
Okay, great. You like it?
Mate.
You like it?
Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt with the hoop. Can you imagine him with the little hula dancer?
The beauty of the film, really, is that those two characters are really one character. And I would compress them both into just Oliver Platt, because he plays both... He does the Garner stuff, but he also does the flirting as well. He's so good. He's so underrated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think Kevin Bacon is a believable, sexy older guy.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't be creepy in my film like it is with Donald Sutherland. It would be like, of course the young women want to have sex with Kevin Bacon. He's so hot. He's the hottest guy. That's fine.
He's a little bit creepy these days, but he works.
A tiny bit creepy, but, you know, it's an old guy. What are you going to do? Old guys are creepy. Okay, and then my two mains, Clint Eastwood... Well, let me do it this way around, because there's a slight criticism here that the person who has the biggest name is actually the Tommy Lee Jones character, but I think it works. You could have a criticism and say they're both pulling too much screen time. Maybe they're both too much like the A1 guy, and we needed one of them to be slightly different. Because what I've done is I've cast Mel Gibson in the Clint Eastwood character. And I've cast... I know.
Hollywood, mea culpa, come back, Big Mel. All is forgiven. We've cast you. We've cast you in a reboot of Space Cowboys, Mel. We want you. We think the audience are ready for you. Space Christ.
Forget about the mea culpa. He's modern day Clint. And then as Tommy Lee Jones, I've gone for Tom Hanks, which I think is the one you could argue the most with. But if I saw those four names on a poster, I would pants and go to the cinema immediately.
Absolutely. Yeah. Forget, stop all the clocks, give the dog a juicy bone, fucking forget about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to see any other movie. I'm just going to that again and again and again.
And can you imagine how well Tom Hanks would sell the dead wife thing, you know? It's there. It's
floods
there.
Of tears.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, heartbreak.
There you go.
And for all of Big Mel's failings, it's a shame he's really fucked himself, because
he could do this.
He's a better actor than Clint Eastwood, as we saw in The Patriot. Because he also lets it out. He lets out, like, Clint just plays repression. He never can let himself have the full.
He never can.
Never can. Whereas Big Mel
can.
Has shown that he will.
He lets it out almost to his detriment. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That's my cancellation Space Cowboys. What about you, though? You were saying you think, what if you could do Space Cowgirls?
Space Reverse Cowgirls.
Other than Meryl Streep, who's going in the film, you know, and which role is she playing?
Well, no, you get Kathy Bates is obviously the Donald Sutherland. Imagine she's a horny horn dog. And, you know, you team her up with probably Alison Janney. I think is actually she's tall. I'd have Alison Janney as the Donald Sutherland. No. Alison Janney is... the James Cromwell.
Yeah, totally. It's completely believable that Alison Janney could run NASA. She's great.
You've been grounded, Janney. You're the baddie.
You're too tall.
Helen Hunt. Helen Hunt is the kind of forgettable side. Like, she's the James Garner.
She's the Garner.
Get her on board. She's the preacher. So that's Bates and Hunt. Brilliant. And then, of course, we've got Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
Is leading the team.
Of course.
And
could there be anyone else? I mean, wow.
No, and then you've got Laura Linney.
Laura Linney's Tommy Lee Jones.
She doesn't quite have the spark.
She could, I mean, because Laura Linney could lead the team. I wonder if you've got those two the wrong way around. I think Susan Sarandon could also. Susan Sarandon's got that sacrifice in her, you know? She's the, like, she's the fly me to the moon girl, isn't she?
Yeah, Sarandon dies, and Linney...
She's the real emotional core of the film.
Yeah.
Linney's the control freak holding it together.
Right.
And I believe that Laura Linney would be furious at young people and at Alison Janney for what, you know, whatever's gone happened in the past. Like, I believe that Laura Linney can play Got a Point to Prove very well.
Yeah, and it's directed by Nora Ephron.
Yeah.
No, Nancy Myers.
It's written by Nora Ephron. Yeah. No,
who's dead, unfortunately. But
okay.
Nancy Myers directs.
Yeah, I like it. That's great. I'd watch that film as well.
Whoa.
Can I do a little hello and welcome to new listener Hayes, who left us a comment in the Movies You Forgot Discord. I thought this was worthy of note because Hayes said, "Hi friends, after watching The Lives of Others, I was craving some podcast content on the film and found Movies You Forgot. I've been binging ever since." That's what Hayes said. And I thought, I was surprised you hadn't already jumped on it, because that means, of course, you know that Hayes found the podcast organically and not through listening to TiVo. So there you go. You've got a fan. That's
yes.
Your fan. You can have Hayes.
Can I?
I've got the other ones, but you can have Hayes. So welcome, Hayes, if you're still listening by this point.
And do join the Discord. We've got lots of fun little channels that I've created. Mm-hmm. Guess the Fourth on Letterboxd is a great little chat. Recommend me movies to watch. Anyone can... You can ask for a film what to watch... What to watch if you want. I'm the first and only person so far to ask people to recommend a movie.
Oh, so it's not just for people to recommend movies to you?
No. Is that what you thought?
Yeah, that's what I thought, because it's called Recommend Me a Movie.
Right.
What Shall I Watch Tonight, it's called, which made it seem very much like it was about you.
How would they know I made that?
Well, I mean, what you made it and then you posted the first comment in it saying, "I've set up what this Discord needs. Another channel. I want something that looks great with a bit of action and at least one quality performance. It doesn't have to be a great flick, just a watchable one. Thanks." It made it seem like you set up the whole channel just to get recommendations for yourself.
Well, you should. Can you post a comment going, "Oh, Adam actually meant this for everyone"? This is
no. I think we should wait 4 weeks for this episode to come out for people to read. There'll be a flurry of new activity in there when the listeners hear this bit, you know.
So yeah, anyway, loads of fun little chat, but also email us. It's not the only way to get involved. Discord, email us, moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. I do read the emails and reply. Joe doesn't.
No,
he's a busy boy. Okay, enough of the horsing around. Let's do some box office. Can we play the box office game, please?
We can. Okay, here we go. Box office game for Space Cowboys. This was released August 6th, the year 2000. What do you think a little old movie like this with four old-timers, what does it cost?
Well, Clint, he goes on a small budget, you know. That's how he gets his stuff in. It doesn't look cheap.
It's quite a lot of high-tech stuff in there, though, isn't there? Spacey sort of stuff and astronaut-type things.
I do feel like he's a little bit out of his element when it comes to shooting the spacey stuff. It wasn't as bad as I was expecting, but some of it, it doesn't quite land, pun intended. He's not going to get. He's not asking for 100. He's not getting 100. So he could pull it in for maybe 60 mil.
Oh, 65 mil estimated. Well yes, done, Adam. Yes, very good. You're inside the 10%. You are inside the 10%.
Glory be.
Glory be. Okay, let's see if you can keep this up. Could you, for the first time ever, do a three sweep? It's possible you could. It is possible that you could. Opening weekend, US and Canada, August 6th, 2000.
I have done a three sweep.
You've never done a three sweep ever?
I have.
When?
I don't remember, but I think I have.
I promise you. Go back through every single episode. You have never, ever done. You've very rarely done a two.
Jesus Christ.
No, I want. Okay. It's still special. Opening weekend. One day it's going to happen. It is going to happen one day.
It's going. That sounds like the lyrics to a Les Miserables song.
It's going to happen one day.
Okay. Opening weekend. I think this has got broad appeal. It's going to bring out the silver pound. And I'm not talking.
Jesus. What? Yeah. And you're not talking about and sex I'm not with talking your wife, about, is it?
No. My wife is 60 and she's got grey hair. Oh, that's sorry, mate. That's too good to not leave in.
Germanism.
Oof. Okay, let's see what. Anyway, that's fun. It's a crowd pleaser. I feel like this will get bums on the seats. Maybe to the tune of 15 mil?
18 mil. Ooh. 18 mil. Now, I mean, of course, it's not a three sweep because it's outside the 10%, and those are the strict rules.
Those are your rules.
Which enable us one day. Yeah, they're my rules, but they enable us one day to have an incredible. There will be one day, there will be an incredible moment. It's the day you get a three sweep is the day we end the box office game forever.
Is that your promise? I mean, the notion that 15 isn't close enough to 18 makes my blood boil. I think that's
it's close enough in
a different
way. It's close enough for us to say congratulations. That's a very good guess, but it's not within the 10%, Adam. It's not within the 10%. One day it will be, okay? Not to say it's a failure.
One day it will be. One day.
Javert. Okay, very close. 18 million. Okay. So you could have a spiritual victory today if you get this next one right. Not a technical victory, but a spiritual victory with Kroos Worldwide. That's Tony Kroos Worldwide.
Tony Kroos Worldwide. Dash is good. Can I sink it into the back of the net like Tony Kroos would? Could I? Well, we all know, of course, the ever reliable 10%. 10 times at the ever reliable 10x rule.
There it is.
If it made 18 mil, the 10x rule would have us believe it would make expected 180 mil.
Well, that would be the basis. And then if it performed to expectations.
And then you've got to make a series of calculations. This was warmly received.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, well, Zan Brooks warmly received it.
Zan Brooks sort of said it was familiar but fine.
Silver Pound received it.
She sure did.
I remember this being advertised.
Okay.
I really, really, really want this to have hit the 10x rule, and I feel like it did perform to expectations, and therefore I do feel like maybe it even performed a little better, and it made $200 million.
It didn't. It didn't, unfortunately. It made $130 million.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's weird that, because I would have thought... Let's do the final bit of the show where we choose next week's flick. One of us reads out a list of movies they forgot. They forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot. They forgot. Now, the person who reads the list out, they don't necessarily have to forgot they forgot. He really, the reader is just trying to get out the other. Okay, so hypothetically, Joe could read a movie that he doesn't really think is a forgot you forgot, but he thinks he'll get me on it, because otherwise this podcast would come to an end.
Yes, it would.
So it's Joe's turn. He wonderfully got me on Space Cowboys because I couldn't get him. I couldn't get him on my list. He's got five attempts, and if you don't get me...
That was your bonus one.
Yeah, if you don't get me on the five goes, we're going to watch Sneakers, starring Robert Redford.
Oh, okay. And now that I need to replace my bonus movie for next week, it's going to be Lost in Translation, okay?
I mean, you could just say that to me and I forgot it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take that one back and I'll pick a different one next week, okay?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, mate. Bang.
Yeah. I think we agreed I could get you on that at some point, didn't we?
I think that was the Discord agreed.
The Discord agreed.
There was a lovely chat of like, why don't you guys ever do animation? And the chat was, we'd had this chat, it was like, I think there's something inherently memorable about animated movies. Howl's, it ain't Spirited Away, it ain't Ponyo. So my kid, she loves Kiki's Delivery Service. I've never seen Porco Rosso. Do you know what? Maybe I'll do a new one. I'll do Porco Rosso.
Some of the more recent ones are really good as well. And actually, completely coincidentally, tomorrow I am taking my nephew to see My Neighbor Totoro in the West End, the theatrical performance. So we can talk about that too.
I mean, it's theatre. I don't think I'll allow it.
In which case, I won't mention it once.